Some fans gear up for game day, but some fans follow their team every day. That's why the Locked On Podcast Network has a daily podcast for your favorite NFL team. Every trade, every overtime win, every game. Our local experts cover the biggest stories around your team every day. Search Locked On plus your favorite NFL team on the Odyssey app or wherever you get podcasts. The Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
In 1970, a 28-year-old recent law school graduate became the most wanted woman in America. She's also my mother.
I'm Zaid Ayers-Dorn, host of the new podcast, Mother Country Radicals. When I was growing up, my parents were on the run from the FBI, at war with the U.S. government. From Crooked Media and Odyssey, Mother Country Radicals, a family history of the Weather Underground. Listen to the entire first season of Mother Country Radicals right now, here on Odyssey.
6:14. I'm Tommy Tucker. Friday morning, June 24th. Thank you for getting your weekend started. I think we're close enough for that. With us here on WWL, highs of 100 today, 100 tomorrow, 94 on Sunday. The rain chances increase 20% today, 30% tomorrow, 60% on Sunday. So issues going to be hot, and we're going to have to deal with it. And there is some activity going on in the Atlantic. It is a long way away, and they don't think that it's going to affect us at all. But as it stands now, we'll talk to Peyton Malone about that later on this morning. So I've been watching some of the January 6th hearings. I've been seeing some of the things on Twitter about this election official or that election official in this or that state refusing to say whether they will accept the results of either the midterm or the presidential election. And as an American, that concerns me because I don't think you can really decide that the election is only legitimate if your side wins. If that's the model going forward, then I think, and I'm not trying to be melodramatic here, we are in trouble as a nation. But maybe the step toward cutting all of that off is to have some election reforms that everybody can agree with. Matt Gerner joins us now, resident elections fellow at the R Street Institute, to talk about that. Good morning, Matt. How are you?
Good morning. I'm doing well.
Matt, am I off base here? Am I getting myself ginned up for no reason by having this bad feeling in the pit of my stomach as the elections are coming up, either midterms or presidential election, with, as I said, this one or that one saying, well, maybe I'll accept the results or maybe I won't?
Yeah, I think that really is concerning, in no small part because we live in a country that it seems half of the country is almost always going to be disappointed by the outcome of an election. Mm-hmm. And if we live in a world where half of the people aren't willing to make, you know, acceptance that that an election was valid and that their side may not have won, it makes it hard to, you know, pick yourself back up and be willing to fight another day. And that's dangerous in a democracy. You know, I like to say that a democracy depends on the consent of the losers, right? The winners have all of the incentive in the world to say they've won, but it requires losers being willing to admit that they didn't and to come back and fight again.
I don't know if you have a position or the R Street Institute has a position. Do you think the election was stolen from Donald Trump, or did he legitimately lose fair and square?
I do not believe the election was stolen from him. I believe that he did lose. He had fewer votes than Joe Biden, particularly in key states. I think there are good concerns to have that didn't ultimately sway the outcome of the election. I can look in Pennsylvania, where the Supreme Court in Pennsylvania, which is a partisan institution over there, a group of Democratic judges said, we will accept ballots after the election deadline in contravention of state law. That said, they set those ballots aside, and it turned out that they weren't necessary to include. But those kinds of decisions, I think, are worth reevaluating. They're worth having a conversation to say, that's not okay. But there weren't enough of those kinds of ballots and situations that were actually counted to sway the overall outcome of the election. Joe Biden is the legitimate president.
I agree, and I think sometimes people conflate that, and they think because there was some fraud and no election is perfect, that therefore the end result was illegitimate. And, of course, some people kind of hop on that or hype it and turn it into something it's not. What we're talking about here today is some reforms that could be made, common sense stuff, that would, again, you can't control what people say after the election, but that would hopefully make the public realize that everything was done to prevent fraud and the results are legitimate, correct?
That's right. And so I like to look at it as a series of principles. Yeah. Principle number one for me is the idea that casting a ballot shouldn't be frustrating for the voter. Voters should largely be put first in the process and said, is this going to be something that people can do? Is there unnecessary red tape? I look at my state I live in, North Carolina, and as an example, for folks who need to be able to vote from home, disability or senior citizen status or otherwise, it requires two signatures from a witness in order to turn in that ballot. For a number of folks, they might live in a home with a spouse and no other adult. So now they have to invite someone over, host almost a little voting party to be able to cast their ballot absentee. So there's a number of those kinds of reforms across the country that can be made to help reduce red tape that doesn't really add anything to the security process. But on the other side, it's also important that we have trustworthy processes to make sure that we have trustworthy outcomes. And the way I see it, that includes making sure that we don't ever attach our election machines to the internet. We're not doing any kind of online voting. I know that there are some places around the country that have started to wonder if that could work for them. I think there were very small elections in states like Washington State up in Seattle where they tried online voting, and that concerns me. But there are some practices we need to make sure we have in place to ensure that the election's trustworthy. And then the final one for me is to make sure that candidates are broadly appealing. And I'll give credit to Louisiana for this, that their election system, your election system, has that primary where 50% of the voters, if they agree, you can just elect someone straight out of the primary. But if not, then you've got a runoff. I think that creates a better situation than a lot of other states have, where someone could win an election at a primary level with, 20, 25% of the vote. And it, based on the gerrymandering and various aspects of a big sort, people can win an election with a really small minority of voters behind them. And I think there's really an opportunity across the country to explore some changes similar to kind of runoffs or maybe instant runoffs using ideas like ranked choice voting. I'm very interested to see how that could help as well.
All right, let's take a break. We'll pick it up here. We come back. I'm getting some texts from a couple of people who, talking about Italian satellites. And if you watch January 6th hearings at all or done any research in all of this, these were all just internet theories that unfortunately made their way to the highest levels of government and then achieved legitimacy, even though they were fantasy and just some kind of internet garbage, because for whatever reason, people chose to embrace them and give them credibility when in fact they had no credibility. But we'll talk more when we come back. 6:21, time for traffic now on WWL. 6:26, Tommy Tucker, WWL, Friday morning, talking to Matt Gerner, resident elections fellow at the R Street Institute. Matt, tell me a little bit about the R Street Institute, will you please?
Great. So R Street is a free market, limited government think tank, basically. And we like to apply those principles across all sorts of subject matter, whether it's criminal justice or trade and all sorts of things, and including just the way that our government works. And that's the program I work in, our governance program, and I focus largely on elections policy across the country.
So when it comes to elections, has there ever really been a pristine election?
Every election will have some element of a handful of nefarious actors trying to do what they can to push the election in their direction. Really, the question is whether or not there are enough of those people doing enough wrong things in one direction to change the outcome. And depending on how close it is, you could have an election that doesn't have a whole lot of voters. We actually had one here in North Carolina that's a very small town that, the outcome was decided by a couple dozen people. That kind of election, it could be meaningful. But when we're looking at statewide elections, it's extremely rare to have enough hanky-panky to sway the outcome.
In terms of the percentage of registered voters that voted in the presidential election, do you have that number in front of you as it relates to the presidential election of 2020?
I apologize, I don't.
That's all right. I was just wondering about that. Because really, if you don't vote, and again, when it gets to Electoral College and so forth, it's the states and it's not your individual vote as much because it's individual elections in each state. Let's talk about the principle number three, winning candidates should be broadly appealing. Explain that, if you will.
So it's my view that when someone ultimately becomes an elected official, the entire system of our government is based on the idea that that person represents the district or the state that they're coming from. And this should mean that that winning candidate has the support of a broad coalition of voters from that district. Unfortunately, in a large number of states and cases, we've got legislative districts where, you know, maybe let's say it's a 50-50 or even 60-40 kind of district where one party has a very small advantage over the other. Often the primary electorate is even smaller than that. You've got, you know, maybe a pretty low turnout primary election. And if you look perhaps at Ohio's most recent Senate primary, they had a number of candidates running for Senate there. And their ultimate winner, J.D. Vance, won with something like 30% of the primary vote. And then we'll go on to the general election and seems to be in a pretty good position to win that general election. But it's not clear that he had a mandate coming out of that primary. A small amount of people were the ones who decided that he would be the one to move on to the general election. And so I look at that kind of problem and the kind of incentives that a system like that creates. It encourages folks to develop a passionate following of a small number of voters who can come out and turn out for them in a primary. And I don't know that that serves the people well on the whole.
I appreciate your time. I really do. And your insight. Matt Germer, resident elections fellow at the R Street Institute. Struggling here, Matt, but I'll get it together. Thank you, sir. Have a good weekend, all right?
Thank you, Tommy.
I appreciate it. It is.